from bureaus worldwide. This is FSN.
Thank you, Wally Barrett. Thank you very much. Welcome to Thursday's programme. How are you doing? Are you well? It's the 12th of November, 2020. Yes, it's the BBG. Do tweet the programme between now and 7 o'clock. The usual Twitter handle, please.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, shortly, you'll be hearing, we'll be hearing from we'll hear from the Conservative MP, Sir Desmond Swain. Now, you'll know, if you're paying attention, that he's pretty much a lone voice in Parliament. He's anti-lockdown MP, former Parliamentary Private Secretary to David Cameron. I spoke with him earlier on this afternoon and talked to him about his own feelings about lockdown, testing, the economy, and more besides. Sir Desmond Swain. And later on in the programme, we're off to Madison, Wisconsin, where Jim Fetzer will join us. Jim hasn't been on with me, I think it's over a year. Well, welcome him back. We're going to talk all things US election fallout with Jim and more, those accusations of cheating and ballot swapping and all the rest of it. Jim Fetzer in the second hour. So lots to be getting on with then. Yes, indeed, back on the air. Sorry about yesterday. Nothing I could do about it. The company that hosts me and my stream was offline themselves for a few hours. And it being on the west coast of America, it would be very early in the morning, which would kind of coincide with the time this programme is live. So sadly, I think it's the third time in 6 years it's happened. So I'm not too critical. It was okay. No show yesterday. But I was due to speak to a gentleman yesterday called Kenner, whom I've gotten to know in recent weeks. Really interesting guy. And he was going to come on yesterday to talk about, amongst other things, lucid dreaming. Right? Remember, a week or so ago, I said, look, we're going to have to lighten, not so much, I don't mean lighten up the content, but we can't continue on for the rest of our lives talking about coronavirus and the misery of it. So he was due to do that yesterday. He will do it with me next Wednesday. It'll be an extended conversation with him, and I think you'll find it fascinating. And there are other such programmes in the offing, or in the planning, I should say. Now, Dr. Vernon Coleman was in touch with me. You'll remember when he was on the programme on Monday, I put out links to smashwords.com, which is where he'd uploaded his latest book, the book about masks. Okay, proof that masks do more harm than good, because he can't get published anymore because of the nature of the content. All right, he knows that. And he was using Smashwords, but sadly, Smashwords deleted the book and deleted his account. So now if you want to read the book, the PDF of the book, the PDF version of it, can be found at Vernon's website, which is vernoncoleman.com. That's www.vernoncoleman.com. Insidious censorship, so it is. Now, you know that my conversation with Vernon about the book, you will know, was deleted from YouTube. I don't care about that, as you well know. Nothing unusual. It's happening to lots of accounts, and that's the way it is. But what was interesting was it was only today that I got an email from Google/YouTube. Just very briefly, here it is. YouTube doesn't allow content that explicitly disputes the efficacy of local health authorities or World Health Organization guidance on social distancing and self-isolation, as it may lead people to act against that guidance. YouTube doesn't allow it. Doesn't allow content that disputes the efficacy of local health authorities or the WHO. So something that we've known for a long, long, long time. Google has appointed itself the Ministry of Truth. That's where we are now. Google says we won't allow any content that takes a different approach or contradicts or disputes the World Health Organization or indeed your own local health authority, which in this case, I suppose, would be the NHS. That's the way it goes. All right? Okay. So they finally got back to me. But as I said, I'm not complaining. I'm not whinging about it. I'm no victim here. I don't care about Google, YouTube. And I'd rather not upload. And I won't be uploading there for much longer. I know I've said this before, but I do mean it. I want to give Tracy Kavanagh a mention. Lovely lady. She runs Le Munch Cafe. She came on the programme a couple of weeks ago to talk about how she is resolutely determined not to bow to the tyranny and to keep her business open. She was great. You can find that interview on Spotify, iTunes and Podomatic. Lovely lady. She was a real fillip, I suppose. A real boost was Tracy. Well, she told me today via Twitter that this morning she had her third visit from the police and, as she described them, council Nazis. And they gave the cafe a £1,000 fine for remaining open in the second lockdown. To cheek of it, she says, "I wouldn't mind, Richie, but the police are regular customers of ours, the irony." But she soldiers on. Now, very briefly, I advertised today that Caroline Stevens was going to be on the programme. Caroline has been on once or twice, I think twice in the past. She was a campaign manager for Leave EU, a businesswoman. And she was due on the programme today to talk about a video that she'd put online a day or two ago. Very interesting video. Very interesting video. Where Caroline claimed that she'd seen slides from a Zoom meeting that was arranged by a charity called Common Purpose. Now, we've heard a lot about Common Purpose over the years and what it's really into, right? So Caroline alleged that there was a meeting in May which was organised by Common Purpose. It happened over Zoom and there were a number of participants, health authorities, the police and others. And she claims that in the interview, things were discussed. The sort of things we've been discussing on the programme. Things were discussed like, well, basically like fourth industrial revolution things. You know, how to take advantage of the virus, whatever the virus is, whether it's a flu, whether it's really coronavirus, whatever. And she said it was incredible evidence that there's a big agenda at play here and that she had slides, real slides that had been used during this presentation on Zoom. So I sent her this morning, come on the programme. She said no problem. And I left it at that. And I assumed the slides would be on her website, carolinestephens.net. So I assumed that. They weren't there. I only looked in the mid-afternoon because I'd been doing a lot of work this morning. I'd recorded Sir Desmond Swain and I had other things to do. So I only looked this afternoon. I couldn't find the slides. So I asked Caroline to send me the slides. And she said she would. But they weren't forthcoming. And as we approached airtime, with still no sign of the slides, which I have to see before carrying out the interview, because in her video presentation, she makes allegations against people, several people, she names them. So I said, send me the slides so at least I can see them and we can do the programme. But she didn't give me the slides, so I had to postpone the interview. And she wasn't too impressed with that, but tough shit, Paddy. I said, look, send me the slides, we will arrange the interview. If I don't see the slides, we have to postpone. That's journalism 101. So that's why Caroline is not on today. But if she sends me the slides, they would be explosive now. This stuff would be explosive stuff. I'll be glad then to publish them myself and get Caroline on the programme to talk about it. All right? All right. 50,000 deaths then, they're claiming. And it's getting as much coverage as any other story today. The allegation that the United Kingdom has gone past the 50,000 death mark. Namely, that 50,000 people have died of coronavirus. But the problem is, and this won't be news to you, the problem is that even the media is being very careful with the language, with the old lingo. Saying, of course, that 50,000 people have now died within 28 days of having tested positive for coronavirus. So in my opinion, which isn't, of course, a scientific one, because I don't have a scientific qualification to my name, dear listener. For me, this is pseudoscience. It's a nonsense to say that 50,000 people have died of coronavirus. But if you say it often enough, and often enough, and often enough, well, people will believe it. So they've been doing that all day long. And Sky News had themselves a bit of an exclusive today. They had a guy on, the chief executive of BioNTech. And I'm going to butcher the man's name now, because I don't think the presenters knew how to pronounce his name. I think his name is Ugur Shahin. U-G-U-R. Ugur Shahin, yes. The chief executive of BioNTech. They developed this new miracle vaccine alongside Pfizer. He gave his first interview today to anybody. Ugur Shahin, the CEO of BioNTech. Here he is speaking to Michelle Clifford of Sky News. This is interesting stuff, I tells you.
So, of course, the first reaction is relief because our whole team, the whole company, all collaborators were awaiting this results anxiously. And as you know, this is a clinical trial, and a clinical trial can be positive and it could be negative. And only when we heard that the trial is positive and very, very positive, we were relieved. And after the relief, happiness.
Are you now feeling the weight of what is literally global expectation?
Yeah, of course, the situation is we feel a huge responsibility. But on the other side, I'm also happy that we are not alone. There are a number of companies who will publish their results in the coming weeks. Yeah, and I expect that many of these results will be positive, because the immune responses that have been published for some of the candidates are also good. Yeah, so I feel that we are not alone. Yeah, so we will contribute to control this pandemic, but we will do it together with other companies.
Okay, so when will the public get it then? Because we've been told that some people will begin receiving it in December. Again, BioNTech chief executive Ugur Shahin, what does he say? When will we get it?
We are at the moment in a close dialogue with regulators around the world. We are talking to the European Medicinal Agency. We are talking to the FDA. We are talking to Canadian Health, to the UK authorities, to the Chinese authorities, to Japanese authorities. And first authorizations or conditional approvals could happen in the United States or in Europe. But the earliest time point for starting supplying vaccine will most likely not be before mid of December. And this mid of December will also not mean that the situation will dramatically change. So we have to expect that this will be really a difficult winter. It will become worse before it gets better. So we will feel the first reliefs in the starting with March, April next year. And ideally, we would have a better controlled situation in mid of next year.
So we'll be back to normal sometime by next summer, said this guy from BioNTech. It's going to get worse before it gets better, he said fairly cryptically. And he wasn't challenged on that point by Sky's Michelle Clifford at all. Get worse before it gets better. And with any luck, we'll be back to some semblance of normality in the middle of next year, the guy said. Right. Right, let's listen to a bit more.
Next year.
But you actually anticipate it is possible people will be getting doses of your vaccine in December this year in the UK?
It could be possible, depending on the decision making process of the authorities.
Yeah, forget about the decision making process of the authorities. This vaccine will be approved. It will be given emergency approval even in a couple of weeks' time. It'll be given emergency approval by the third week in November, middle of next week. Maybe before then. I understand that Boris Johnson, the UK Prime Minister, is currently addressing the nation again. I believe he is. Or is it going to be a bit later? There is an address, a press conference scheduled for this afternoon. I have no idea. But they will approve it, and they will do that right soon. Have no doubt about it. Now, unsurprisingly, on health, the BBC reported today that the number of people waiting over 1 year for hospital treatment in England has hit highest levels since 2008. You see, the way the NHS works, patients are meant to be seen within 18 weeks. Meant to be. But nearly 140,000 of the 4.35 million on the waiting list at the end of September had actually waited over a year. And surgeons were canvassed for opinions today by the media, and surgeons said pretty much all of them, anyone I saw, I see a few different surgeons, consultant surgeons on TV, and I heard some on radio, they said that basically patients are living with pain, waiting for treatment, including knee and hip operations. Some of these surgeons said the situation is going to get even worse during the winter. Hospitals in Bradford, Leeds, Nottingham, Birmingham and Liverpool in recent weeks have announced, of course, the mass cancellation of non-urgent work. Yes. Right? Here's Sky News reporter Laura Bundock with more on this.
Don't forget that the quicker a person is referred and less time they have to wait, the quicker they can be diagnosed, start their treatment, the better the outcome. So these figures are really important. We've known for a long time that the virus has had a huge impact on the NHS and its services. So if we look at some of the figures out today, we can see the number of people having to wait more than a year to start hospital treatment in England stood at 139,545 in September of this year. Compare that with September the previous year, 2019. The number having to wait more than a year for treatment to start was just 1,305. These figures from NHS England also show that 1.72 million people were waiting more than 18 weeks to start treatment in September 2020. Now, the government's target is 18 weeks. That's around 60% of people not making that target, or only 60% making the target of having less than 18 weeks. If you look at some other figures that are out today, we can look at the waiting times for tests. Now, people who were referred for a test, things like a CT scan, MRI scan, should be able to get that test within 6 weeks. That's the target. But as of September, there were 420,400 people waiting longer than 6 weeks for these tests. A lot of these tests, endoscopy, things like that, are often associated with cancer treatment and diagnosis. So it's crucial testing is carried out as quickly as possible. And when it comes to accident and emergency admissions, the number of attendances, the number of people going to A&E in October dropped 26.4% on the October of 2019. So what we're seeing, I think, is an overall picture of the impact and the high impact that the virus has been having. And don't forget, these aren't just numbers and statistics we're talking about. These are actual people. So when it comes to waiting times, these are people waiting for treatments that they need, people possibly waiting in pain with their lives on hold while they are unable to access these services. When it comes to cancer, there is some good news in that the amount of cancer treatment taking place at the moment has pretty much reach pre-pandemic levels. But of course, there's plenty of concern with these figures as well.
Yeah, treatment for cancer may be back at pre-pandemic levels, but testing for cancer isn't. Yeah. And we know, don't we, that entire wards were left empty in regular hospitals at the outset of this nonsense. We know this. We know that entire wards were left vacated to make way for an avalanche of COVID patients that never arrived. This isn't disputed now. And they built these Nightingale hospitals in London, up here in Manchester and elsewhere, and those lay empty as well. This is the madness of it. So you had the Nightingale hospitals empty. The real hospitals had many wards empty, lying there, beds empty. People could have been treated and weren't treated. We know this. Now, this is massive. Government plans, this is the Daily Mail today, it was also covered in the Telegraph and the Times. Government plans to roll out 200 million rapid result £5 COVID tests from January, allowing anyone testing negative to get a freedom pass to attend sporting events and concerts in the same day. Who predicted this way back in March and April? Who told you on this programme that eventually you wouldn't be able to go anywhere without proving that you'd passed the test or that you had, or that you were up to date with your vaccinations? Right, a rapid COVID test which costs a fiver could finally allow Britons back into concerts and sports events. The government is going to buy 200 million of the tests which give a yes or no result in 15 minutes. A negative result would allow millions of people the freedom to socialise. Experts say this could be key to moving away from strict coronavirus restrictions. It's hard to believe sometimes. I know I've said this before. I'm repeating myself. It is hard to believe that you're saying this stuff out loud. So if you test negative, you could also receive a day pass to go to the theatre, cinema or a sports event. Scientists have found the test can detect around 3 in 4 positive cases of COVID. The accuracy goes up to 95% when dealing with people who have a high viral load, which makes people most infectious. It drops sharply when people have low levels of the virus in their bodies. Scientists have called for the public to be given lessons on how to correctly administer the test. Amazing. The article goes on to say the government wants to buy 60 million of these tests a month. It wants to buy 60 million of these tests a month. Imagine that life. We talked about this months and months ago. One particular program, I can't remember when, I was fairly despondent. I remember I got some emails afterwards. Rah, Richie, you were fairly down. Because I was projecting ahead to next year, to concerts that I was due to be going to now, October, November, that were cancelled, thinking, you won't be going to those concerts in 2021. Because it won't be a case of, in 2021, okay, the pandemic is gone now, let's get back to normal. No, you'll need to be taking an on-the-day test before being granted permission to go anywhere. Have a listen to this. Trinity College Dublin, an Ivy League place of education, a very prestigious school in the world of education, let alone Ireland. It's got a biochemistry professor called Luke O'Neill. Biochemistry. I know a little bit about him. I don't know too much about him. He was on RTE Radio 1, which is obviously in Ireland, with a guy called Ray Darcy. Listen to Ray Darcy discuss the vaccine procurement and rollout with biochemistry professor Luke O'Neill.
Yeah, so you have to get 70% of the population to take it. And is that everybody or just adult population?
Adult initially, yeah, right. Exactly. Okay. See, children, as you know, with this virus, children aren't especially a source of spread.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to worry about them. That's not like measles, which does kids spread like wildfire, you know. With this one, you'll start with the healthcare workers, of course, first and foremost, then the vulnerable, the older people. One prediction that Pfizer have made, Ray, is every nursing home will be given vaccines, you see. So we start to protect the older population next, you know, and then gradually we roll it out more generally.
Right. We don't know about the timeline, you know, for Ireland, for example. We're part of an EU deal, are we?
We are. The EU has already bought 200 million doses in total. And they would give that out pro rata based on the number of healthcare workers and older people initially. So we should get our share.
We'll get our share, said Luke O'Neill. We're part of an EU deal, are we, says the presenter. Well, of course, said the professor. This isn't a sovereign country. We don't make our own decisions. We don't have our own health policies, you stupid presenter. It's the European Union, which has ordered 200 million doses and we'll be given our share, says Luke O'Neill. But it gets worse.
Share of that 200 million and then keep the order book going, I suppose. You know, and then if the next company comes up, we order, the EU order some off them. So it's very much a case of getting as much as we can, as quick as we can.
Just to go back a little bit, would you be in favour of the vaccine being mandatory?
That's a tricky one, right? You're much better off to make a consensus view on vaccines. I mean, what they've done in the past is you don't make it against the law, you exclude people. So one prediction here is you cannot travel unless you have the vaccine. And that would incentivize people. That's a better way to do it, I think.
That's a better way to do it. Just in case we didn't quite catch that, here he is again.
So one prediction here is you cannot travel unless you have the vaccine. And that would incentivize people.
That'll incentivize people. You cannot travel unless you have the vaccine. Yeah. And the hapless, feckless, rogue Ray Darcy didn't go after him. You can get the interview on the RTE radio player if you think I'm pulling the wool over your eyes. The presenter just didn't say anything. Ah, So you want to take a basic human liberty away from a man or a woman, do you? Their basic human right. Their fucking human right. Their sovereign fucking right to walk or travel wherever they fucking want. You think they should be denied that unless they take a poisoned fucking jab from Bill Gates. Is that right? Is what I would have said. I wouldn't have sworn, and I probably wouldn't have invoked the name of Gates. Yeah.
So one prediction here is you cannot travel unless you have the vaccine.
One prediction.
Incentivize people.
It's interesting he phrased that. He didn't say one proposal or one idea. He said one prediction. Because he speaks to many of these men and women, his peers in the UK, in Scandinavia, in Europe, of course. That's what they're planning to do. They've admitted it. You won't be going anywhere unless you take the vaccine. The vaccine, which isn't a toxic tidal wave of pus and shit. No, it isn't. It's, remember what Matt Hancock said.
I know that they will rise to this challenge of being ready, when the science comes good, to inject hope into millions of arms.
That's right.
This winter.
Yeah, that's right. It's not aborted fetal cells. No, it isn't. It's not adjuvants like aluminium and all that shit. No, it's hope. Hope into your arms. We're going to dose you up to the gills with hope. Hey, did you hear this? Did we need to be told this? Massive corporations are cleaning up in lockdown. Amazon, the massive supermarkets. And the little guy or the little gal is going to the wall. Their businesses are being destroyed. They're being told that you can't open because you don't sell essential produce. So you can't open. So you've just got to go down the fucking toilet. Tough shit, Paddy. That's what's happening to the small businessman and woman. But massive corporations like Amazon and the supermarkets, they're selling these so-called non-essential items online. Yeah. And they're making billions and billions of pounds while mom and pop organisations are going to the wall. BBC, to its credit today, had a number of people on. Helen, who was disgusted to find that Lidl was selling the things that she wasn't permitted to sell when she was told to close. And it's killing her. She's going to the wall. And here's Lisa speaking to BBC Radio 5 live this morning. This is the reality now for businessmen and women. Listen to Lisa.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. I'm opposite an Aldi, and Aldi have a toy promotion on at the moment. So I know customers are going over the road buying whatever toys they like, and my door is locked. And yeah, that's heartbreaking to know that they can do that and I can't. I understand the regulations and why we have to do it. I just don't think it's a level playing field and it's not particularly fair on the smaller businesses. I think we have very good controls when we were allowed to be open. And I think we did everything as best as we could. And I don't necessarily agree that the major supermarkets are following as strict rules as we did when we were open.
Well said, Lisa. Well said. Not only did you spend an enormous amount of money, to make yourself COVID compliant, so that you could distance people and you could have them coming in one way and out the other, and so they could have hand sanitizer and all that crap. Not only did you do all that when they asked you to do it, but they told you to close down anyway and allowed some of the biggest corporations in the world to sell the products that you can't sell now. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's unfair for us.
I mean, have you felt anger about this, Lisa?
Emma Barnett's a genius, huh? What do you think?
You sound more sad at the moment than anything and frustrated.
I think everyone's deflated that owns their own business because it's challenging times, isn't it? And we're trying our very, very best to survive. And it feels like we're swimming against the tide. If we're not allowed to open in December, times will be much, much harder.
I was going to say, what will it mean, Lisa, for you as a business if lockdown's extended past December 2nd?
I think it'd be very, very hard to survive if we can't open in December. As you know, everybody's saying they're hoping that we will, but if we don't, then it is our most important month for us and for a lot of businesses. Christmas has been pushed back every year because of Black Friday. Mm. So if December disappears, yeah, I don't know what we'll do. To be fair,
yeah, you'll go out of business. God love you. lose everything. And your employees will as well. And they've been talking today about how to pay for all of this. Because they've borrowed hundreds of, well, they haven't borrowed hundreds of billions, but they've borrowed billions. Billions. Right? Through the issuing of government bonds to the Bank of England and to other institutions. And of course, everybody will have to pay it back. So today, you're not going to believe this. Deutsche Bank recommended that one of the ways that we can all pay for it is if we put a 5% tax on the salary of everybody who works from home. Yeah. Deutsche Bank, another criminal, filthy, evil institution, says, let's tax 5% of a worker's salary if those workers work from home. In the future. The tax would be paid for by employers and the income generated would be paid to people who cannot work from home. They could earn £48 billion, apparently, if this was introduced. £36 billion, excuse me. Imagine. This is where it's all going to go. Bail-ins. See Cyprus. A wealth tax. A one-off wealth tax. From everybody in the country. Earlier this year, they were even proposing this on Sky News. Ed Conway, Sky's economics editor who writes for the Times newspaper, said, yeah, do it really quick so that people can't move their money and give everybody a one-off hit of their savings to pay for this. Lunacy. Yeah. The comedian David Baddiel. I don't think he's been funny for 25 years, if ever. Deleted a tweet he made joking that Boris Johnson was having sex with his key aide because it was branded homophobic. You might be following this story. I decided not to cover it because it's completely irrelevant. They mentioned it in the news. Johnson's director of communications, Lee Kane, quit yesterday, apparently after a standoff with Johnson's partner, Carrie Symons. Right? The news has given this coverage today. The news media has. I don't care about it. I don't think you do either. Tweeting in response to this story, Baddiel wrote, why exactly is Carrie Symons opposed to the appointment of Lee Kane? I can only assume Boris is shagging him. Which isn't funny, but it isn't remotely offensive. But he deleted it, Baddiel. After being accused of homophobia, he deleted it. This guy, who's also been very vocal about taking the coronavirus vaccine as well. He can't wait to get it, David Baddiel. Why did they bow down to these people? Interesting question. Anne Widdecombe, formerly of this parish, and she will be again, was on talk radio, former, of course, Conservative MP, and dancing, what's it called? Strictly Come Dancing contestant. She was on talk radio with Ian Collins today discussing the woke errati. That's the new name now. The woke errati. Some good points made here by Anne Widdecombe.
Because the establishment, as you've correctly pointed out, the establishment just kowtows to all of this. And, you know, even though it's only a minority, and even though the vast majority either are not interested or take an opposite view, the establishment will always bow down to what are now being called the wokerati, the people who are woke. And there's no need to. One should merely stand up to them, and that's all it's going to take. And last year, for example, when no platforming was all the rage at universities, that, you know, that's the procedure whereby you don't have anybody who's got a controversial opinion. I did a debate in the Oxford Union on whether no platforming should go ahead or not. Naturally, I said that it should never take place.
Yeah.
And I was expecting to lose that motion, instead of which our side won by hundreds, literally, and got a standing ovation. Those young people do appreciate freedom. Yeah. Now, if they can, why can't others?
Yeah.
What's happened to the view that we once held, which was that however strongly you disagree with somebody, nevertheless, you defend their right to express that view.
Of course. I thought you were going to tell me you were no platform from a no platforming debate.
No, I
that
wasn't.
Would have been extraordinary.
Now, Shah, the Labour MP, refused to take part in the debate. She was scheduled to attend, refused to take part.
Why?
Because one of the people on our side was Katie Hopkins. And now Shah said no, she wouldn't share a platform with her. Now, I'll share a debating platform with anybody. I won't sit on a platform and listen to somebody giving a speech of which I disapprove unless I can answer back. But if I can debate with them, if I can answer back, I'll share a platform with anybody.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point, isn't it? And I thought, you know, good universities teach you that. That's the whole point of debate, isn't it? It's again, it's back to the, you know, it's not a comfort blanket. And certainly the Oxford Union have had far more controversial figures than Hopkins who've pitched up over the years. And, of course, that's the point, to scrutinise and question and debate and discuss and then conclude and decide you either agree or still fundamentally disagree. What's wrong with that?
Yes, that sounds good. That's the way it used to be. 21 minutes to the top of the hour. Tell you what we'll do. We'll have a tune. When we come back, you will hear my conversation with Sir Desmond Swain, MP. Spoke with him a little bit earlier on. This is Classic Cheese. I don't know why, but there you are. It's Classic Cheese. Welcome to the show, by the way. Right, Chesney Hawks on the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. A story that isn't that relevant to us on this programme, to me or you, but it's everywhere today, is a story about a new romantic comedy called Wild Mountain Thyme. Have you seen that? Have you seen the hoo-ha about that today? It's a romantic comedy where Emily Blunt, Jamie Dornan and Christopher Walken play Irish people. Yeah, Emily Blunt, Jamie Dornan and Christopher Walken play Irish people. And apparently the accents are the worst ever attempted by a non-Irish person doing an Irish accent, allegedly. The trailer is everywhere today. Rotten Tomatoes Twitter account if you want to hear it and see it. I caught a little bit of it earlier. I won't play it for you now. Maybe later on. It is absolutely diabolical. What sort of casting director making a romantic comedy set in Ireland thinks that Jamie Dornan, Emily Blunt and Christopher Walken? Is that not cultural appropriation? Is that not like blackfacing? You could make that argument, couldn't you? Why didn't they get an Irish person to play the role? You might say, well, it wouldn't be acting then, would it? But yeah, something you might want to check out yourself. Right, let's move swiftly on then. Mentioned, if I can just bring up. There you are. Yeah, I've got it. Sir Desmond Swain then is an MP, New Forest West. He's been the MP there since 1997. He's also a former parliamentary private secretary to David Cameron. Very anti-lockdown, as you'll know by now. You will have seen him in recent weeks popping up on, well, you'll have seen him in Parliament, is where you will have seen him. You will have seen clips of him in Parliament speaking out very passionately against the measures. But he's also popped up on talk radio once or twice as well. I think he's a bit of a lone voice, personally. So I spoke with him this afternoon. And I asked him about a comment that he made yesterday where he said he believed that the British people seem to thirst for even more rigorous measures and controls on their liberty. Far from wanting to get out of the lockdown, said Desmond Swain yesterday, people seem to thirst for more controls on their liberty. If that is true, I asked Sir Desmond Swain MP, why is it true? This is what he told me.
Well, the pollsters keep telling us that. The pollsters tell us that consistently across all age groups and across all political persuasions, broadly it's 60-40 in favour of even tougher restrictive measures to stamp out the COVID virus. Let me be clear, however, I haven't found any of these people. You know, I have had, since I started banging on about the restrictions and raising profound questions about the rationale for doing so and the risks of doing so, I have received an enormous correspondence, thousands and thousands of communications. And I can count the people who say you've got it wrong on the fingers of one hand. Now, I'm not sufficient. You know, I'm not stupid. I know that people tend to reinforce one another. You know, you tend to speak to the people and seek out the people you agree with. So there's clearly an element of that going on. But I've certainly not seen the evidence that there's overwhelming backing for these measures. But that's what the pollsters tell us.
And you've been on the record as saying that your more senior constituents, your more elderly constituents have been in touch with you almost uniformly, saying that we're in our 70s, we're in our 80s, we don't want this, we want to make these decisions for ourselves. Is that right?
Yes. When there was a suggestion in the middle of the summer that the rest of us could relax the restrictions, but that the over 70s would be required to remain in some form of lockdown, I received a huge correspondence, because I have the second highest proportion of retired people of any parliamentary division. I received a huge number of people saying, hold on a minute. Now, actually, that's a decision we'd like to make for ourselves. But more important, you know, we haven't got that much life left, and we'd rather have a real life than this half life and take that risk ourselves. That's a decision for us to make.
I won't say enemies, Sir Desmond, it's not a great word, but your opponents claim that you and your other more sceptical Conservative colleagues are not taking the virus seriously and that you're underplaying how dangerous it is. How virile or how serious do you think this virus is?
I think it is serious. It's certainly a horrible disease. I wouldn't recommend anyone catching it. But we have to, you know, have a sense of proportion. And the sense of proportion is that, yes, 50,000 people have died, but that's what you would expect in a bad flu season. And the reality is that 1,700 people die every day, and COVID is nowhere near being chief amongst their killers. So, of course, I believe that we should be taking the virus seriously and we should be taking all sorts of proportionate measures. But sometimes you have to consider whether the measures you are taking are worse than the disease itself. And lockdowns, you know, are proven to do one thing. They make us all poorer, and they make poor people even poorer. You know, poverty, recessions, loss of employment cause deaths. You know, the whole focus of the lockdown has led to a reduction in the treatment of people with all sorts of terminal conditions and the ending of a number of clinical trials that would have produced cures for people in the future. The government's own estimate is that the number of people who are going to die as a consequence from non-COVID causes runs into the hundreds of thousands.
Hundreds of thousands, yeah, it does. You talk there about it being a very serious disease, and I'm like yourself. I think I may have had this, whatever it might be, back in the very, very late winter. And you say, yeah, it is serious, and we should take proportionate measures. But you've done some very interesting work, and I've looked into it. Well, to try and not to discredit you, but I've looked into the work you've done on testing and false positives to see could I, you know, turn it inside out and could I be critical of you? But I couldn't. So on the one hand, you're saying it's very serious. But on the other hand, you've discovered evidence that says that the testing system itself might very well be fundamentally flawed. I've even had a scientist on this programme say that the PCR test itself is worthless. So how do we know for a fact that it's this really serious disease that threatens so many people if the testing isn't good?
Yeah, I think the two positions are not mutually exclusive. I mean, I'm quite prepared to say this is a serious disease because lots of people have died of it. However, you know, I agree with you that, you know, there are a huge number of false positives and questions about the way that we record the deaths. You know, this nonsense, as if we were in some sort of determination to win the International League of claiming the most COVID deaths. You know, if you fall under a bus within 28 days of having a positive COVID test death, you're a COVID death.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing is ridiculous. So I accept that there are huge question marks about the validity of the testing and some of the numbers that we've been getting. But that doesn't undermine the fact that, you know, a substantial number of people, most of them who have what the clinicians call comorbidities, you know, they're weakened immune systems, they've got all sorts of problems, have died. But hey, they've still died. And the interesting thing, I think, on this score is the criticism that's been made of Sweden. You know, people have turned around and said, well, oh, look at Sweden. They had more excess deaths than Denmark, which locked down. And that's the interesting thing with the Nordics. The fact is that in the last flu season, the other Nordic countries had a very severe flu season with very significant excess deaths. Sweden, by contrast, had a very light one with a deficit of deaths, according to the long-term average.
Yeah.
So when COVID-19 came along, there were more people with those sorts of vulnerabilities who would have ordinarily been carried off by flu were available to be carried off by COVID-19. And that's the, you know, it's a terrible thing to say that, you know, there are a significant number of people who are going to fall for the diseases that are going about at the time. And many of the deaths that people have had from COVID might well have arisen from all sorts of other causes, including flu.
In any case.
And the reality is, throughout the recent months, flu has killed more than COVID-19.
Tell me this, Sir Desmond. Why is the Prime Minister seemingly, I can't say that he is because I don't know, but why is he seemingly ignoring scientists in their thousands? And I could name some of them. They've been on this programme. Martin Kulldorff, Harvard University. I could be here all day. They've not got any, you know, any axe to grind with Boris Johnson. They're calling it, as they see it, as preeminent physicians and academics. Why is he ignoring them and sticking to the advice he's getting from Sage? Why, in your opinion?
Well, there are two things. First of all, lots of people come to me and bend my ear at a surgery, and then when I disagree with them, they tell me I've ignored them. I didn't ignore them. I listened to what they said. I just disagreed. Now, I haven't heard his reasoning. I've not had that. It might be that he has a counter argument that I am unaware of. But beyond that, I'd say it's this. You know, you're surrounded by this scientific establishment telling you that it's going to be disastrous and, you know, 250,000 people are going to die and you will be responsible. And you're surrounded by those voices and you don't have the easy access to the other voices that are saying, you know, they've got this wrong. It, you know, you get into this bubble, into this bunker mentality. Now, it might be that. I don't know. There was a time when I was, you know, in number 10 and saw what was going on and it was the heart of decision making. Those days have gone. They went with David Cameron. So I can't speak for the existing administration. But that's what I suspect has happened.
Sorry to interrupt, Sir Desmond. Though he will know by now, the modelling done by Niall Ferguson was ridiculously, I don't know, it was over the top, it was overblown. Ferguson had a previous history of this, and even recently we know that Professors Whitty and Valance were over-egging the pudding in terms of the 4,000 deaths a day. So he knows this now, Boris Johnson. He must do.
That's why I'm pulling my hair out. How is it that these people, with such a long track record of calling the end of the world, are still being listened to as if, you know, that their previous predictions were valid? That's, you know, I can't account for it. But I don't, you know, I do believe that the Prime Minister honestly believes that he is acting in the best interests. But how we get through and persuade him that they've got this wrong
is another thing.
I think we've just got to keep banging on.
Just a couple of very quick questions. Thanks for taking the call today. I know you're very busy. I can hear various bells going off there in the background. God knows what's going on. Votes, votes, I presume, and other such things. Just before lunch then, I've had conservative commentators on the programme, people like James Dellingpole and others. You couldn't call them conspiracy theorists. And they reckon that the virus has been taken advantage of by people who want to transform the way we live our lives and exert far more control over us, a sort of authoritarian way of living. And they talk about the World Economic Forum and the Fourth Industrial Revolution. You know, these are things that people might have laughed at easily in the past, but you begin to wonder. I mean, you've said in interviews you've done recently, you know, being told who we might meet with, when we might meet them, the interference in our family life, you've called it truly shocking. Do you think it's possible that those who want to make our lives different, to you know, impose that way of living on us, have taken advantage of the virus?
Yes, they're there, but they're not in power. So I've no doubt that there are many people who are licking their lips at the diminution of liberty and at the way that, frankly, we have hobbled our economies. But I don't believe that they're the ones that are making the decisions.
Fair enough.
So that's my view.
Final question. Did you have undue influence, though, don't they, on think tanks that advise governments and even, you know, government ministers themselves? But that's a conversation for another time. Final question. I know that next year, I know this in my bones, Sir Desmond, that if we want to go and see a theatre, a play, if we want to go and see a concert, if we want to go and see the BBC Philharmonic, you and me, they're going to tell us that we're going to need to prove that we were vaccinated or that we were tested. I don't want to live like that. That's dystopian to me. I don't believe I should have to live like that as an autonomous, as a free human being. Is that how you think things will go? And what do you think of it?
Well, I hope that won't go. I mean, you know, that's show me your papers, yeah. You know, isn't it? That's the Stasi state. No, I don't want to go there. And I will certainly be valiantly battling against that. I certainly don't believe there's any possibility of a compulsory vaccination program. But you worry me with that suggestion.
Coercion.
That there are ways around that by saying, well, you can't do this unless you've been vaccinated.
Yeah,
I personally will be the first in the queue to be vaccinated. But I don't believe that any pressure should be put on people to do so.
Even, and I'm being cheeky now, this is the absolute bloody final question, as we say here on this show. You say that you'd have the vaccine. Now, I am not anti-vaccine. I never have been. I have had anti-vaxxers on the show. But what I would say is this. If the average age of somebody dying with it is 82, which it is, and they do have comorbidities, and the survivability rate is 99.7%, why do we need a vaccine? We don't need one, surely.
Well, we have vaccines for flu, still it typically kills 20,000 people a year. I mean, I think you've got to be realistic about vaccines. But clearly, there is a problem now with a significant proportion of the population who are frightened to go out and frightened to do things. And we need them. We need them to be economic individuals spending money and creating footfall in our high streets. And if the price of getting them out of home, of their homes, is a vaccine to encourage them to behave normally, then that's a price that I think is certainly worth paying. I don't personally believe that I would need it. I swim in the Serpentine every morning, so I've got to be immune to virtually anything that's going.
Normally takes 10 years, Sir Desmond. Normally takes 10 years or longer to prove the efficiency or the efficacy and safety of these things. You wouldn't be worried that in 2 weeks' time we're going to give emergency approval to it. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I won't be taking it. Again, not because I'm any conspiracy theorist, but because I don't think I need it, and B, it's been rushed, I think. Absolute final answer, and thanks for coming on. Go ahead.
Well, I differ from you in that respect, in that, as I say, I'd be the first in the queue because I'd be keen to encourage others.
Yeah.
There is the possibility. But, you know, it's not as if, with the Chinese, where they were requiring people to pay 40 quid a head for a vaccine that had already been approved some weeks ago. And you would naturally, in such a regime, be suspicious of the speed with which it had been produced. But this has been, I think, fairly rigorously done. It's going to go through the normal procedures. There may well be a risk. There's a risk in crossing the road. I'm prepared to encounter it.
Okay, swine flu and narcolepsy. That's my final word on it. I'm not going to say any more on that. Sir Desmond, thanks for your time today. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
Yeah, Sir Desmond Swain on the programme today. I spoke with him just after lunchtime. Some interesting things in there about the vaccine, not needing it, but he said he would be prepared to take it if it encouraged others. And that's the thing, you see, that's the thing that's very dispiriting. People who, I think, understand, I don't mean just him now, but people who understand that there isn't any need for any vaccine. There's no need for it, whether it's safe or not. And I doubt very much that anybody could know that this Pfizer BioNTech vaccine is safe. No way. I wouldn't touch it with a barge pole. Listen to Dr. Vernon Coleman. These companies have a history of putting bad products in the marketplace and killing people and covering it up. And vaccines are not the same now as they used to be. I don't say that I'm not anti-vaxxer to be apologetic to guys like Desmond Swain, not at all. But to be honest, fleshing that opinion out, you know how I feel. I would never take a vaccine. None. At any time. I don't trust them. I don't trust the people who manufacture them. But do I think that stimulating the body's immune response, using bits of virus to do that, to generate an immune response, do I think that's possible and that it could be done safely? Yeah, they might have done it safely in the past. I don't know, but I don't believe it's safe now. I've spoken to too many mothers and families of vaccine-injured people, so I wouldn't touch one. But it's a shame that people are so desperate. You could hear him say at the end, you know, we need people to get it because we need to stimulate the economy and get people up and running again. So even though he knows 99.7% survivability, the only people dying of it are people in their 80s who are already sick. He knows the vaccine is worthless, useless, no need for it. But things are so bad economically. Yeah, I'd take it if it was just to encourage others to do it. Interesting guy. An honest guy, I think. I enjoyed speaking with him, Sir Desmond Swain there. On the Richie Allen Show, it's exactly 2 minutes past six. Let's get headlines from FSN, shall we? And when we come back, I'll chat a bit more with you. And then we're off to Madison, Wisconsin to Jim Fetzer. Headlines.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Pro-democracy former lawmakers in Hong Kong say they will continue to campaign against the government despite their mass resignation. President-elect Joe Biden's named long-running aide Ron Klain as his chief of staff. Boris Johnson's Downing Street administration is in turmoil after one of his top advisers quit, and more than 8,000 people tested positive for coronavirus in Delhi in the last 24 hours, the biggest single-day surge from an Indian state.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with most of them, even if the testing is accurate. There's nothing wrong with these people. It's insane what they want to do here in Manchester and Salford. They want everybody to get a test so that they can find the virus inside totally healthy people. What's the point in that? Well, you know what the point is. No point in me telling you, eh? You're not stupid.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Yeah, just to answer somebody there on Twitter who says, why weren't you a bit harder on Sir Desmond Swain? It's a fair question, and I've got very thick skin. You don't have to behave like Piers Morgan, to get somewhere in a conversation with somebody. You don't have to shout at people and interrupt them. When Sir Desmond said that he trusted the vaccine manufacturers, I clearly said swine flu and narcolepsy, and I clearly said that I wouldn't be taking it. That's all you have to do. I don't need to shout that at him. I don't need to beat him. It's a game of opinions. So I hear you. But like I said, you don't have to be Piers Corbyn or Jeremy Paxman constantly interrupting people. I made the point that he himself, on the one hand, said 50,000 people have died from it. But I said to him, on the other hand, you said that the false positive rate is astonishing. So how do we know that 50,000 people died from it? And then I clearly disagreed with the man about the vaccine necessity. That's all you have to do. That's how you do your job. You know, you don't have to shout at people. Criticism is welcome, but I will respond to it when I think it's a tad unfair. I'd like these guys to keep coming on the programme, you know. That's another thing that's a big problem for me. Most of the time I invite somebody on from a political party, most of the time they say no because of some previous guests, you know, because they read something in The Guardian or they read something in The Jewish Chronicle or they read something in The Mail that says, oh, this guy talks to the crazies. And they'd think, well, I better not go on there then. So most of the time they say no. So it was a nice thing that he said yes. It was nice. I wish more of them would come on and we could have grown-up conversations, you know. Right, it's 6 minutes past the hour. The one and only Jim Fetzer. What a man. Very old friend of mine. Been speaking with Jim for many, 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 many years. And to those of you who are brand new to this programme, and some of you tell me on social media that you're brand new to this type of media, the independent media, you will probably not know that way back in 2002, 2003, Jim Fetzer was one of the first academics, the first well-known academics to really challenge the 9/11 narrative, September the 11th narrative. And he did so brilliantly. And he did so at a great personal cost to himself. Now, of late, of course, Jim has been very controversial because he was in court last year, the year before last, with Lenny Posner, the father of Noah Posner. And I'm not getting into that today. I hammered away at Jim Fetzer on this programme talking about Sandy Hook and we butted heads. We argued and argued. I did my job. He has his opinion. It went to court. That was settled. I'm not getting into it. I want to talk about the US election and the continued claims by US President Donald Trump and people close to him, well, that he was robbed. Sticking with the cheesy theme, here's John Paul Young on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Yeah. On Thursday, November 12th, 2020. Back in 3 minutes. Love is in the air. John Paul Young on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Jean Ann Crowley, thespian extraordinaire, pointed out to me that I might look like a bit of an idiot. I look like a bit of an idiot all the bloody time. But apparently Jamie Dornan is from the north of Ireland. He's from Northern Ireland. And I was talking earlier on about this new film, Wild Mountain Time, with Emily Blunt, Jamie Dornan, a guy called John Hamm and Christopher Walken. Walken, Dornan and Blunt. And I was lamenting the accents. I did hear a bit of it. I'm not sure I have time to play any of it for you, but you will find it on the Rotten Tomatoes or Rotten Tomatoes Twitter thing. It's set in Ireland. It's a romantic comedy and Christopher Walken is particularly brutal. Really bad. Yeah. Wild Mountain Time or Thyme, however you bloody pronounce it. Right. Let's get my old mate Jim Fetzer on the show. Before we say hi to Jim, let me remind you that there has been a big change in the Richie Allen Show schedule. Big change. Sunday View is gone. It's gone for the foreseeable future, Sunday View. And it has been replaced by a Friday afternoon drive time radio show presented by yours truly. I'll be with you tomorrow at 3 and every other Friday at 3 p.m. UK time. To replace, as I said, Sunday View. So Monday to Thursday, 5 o'clock, and Fridays at 3, all times UK, of course. There isn't much that I can say about my guest this hour that hasn't been said already. I mentioned a while back, we've known each other now for well over a decade. I first came across him because of his fantastic work in deconstructing the September the 11th narrative. He did an amazing job. He's one of the very first people, if not the first guy in academia to take it apart. He's a bit of a doyen of critical thinking. He's an author and a broadcaster and a researcher. Let's welcome back to the programme. Hang on a second, there's a bit of a problem there. Ah, he's calling me. Ah, there you go. Jim Fetzer, welcome back to the programme. How are you?
Oh, Oh, Richie, I am ecstatic to be back with you, my friend. I so love what you do. I think you're the best in the business.
You're a gent. Thanks for saying that. I was giving you a big, lovely, long-winded introduction, and then I lost connection, and then you came back. So good to have you back. It's been too long. I think it's been a year since you were on. We'll have to remedy that. Tell me, before we get talking about the election, we can't start anywhere else but with the coronavirus scam. What has it been like for you in Madison, Wisconsin, watching this unfold, going back to February, March, the lockdown, what it's doing to the economy, the vaccine that's imminent, Jim? Give us your thoughts, my friend, on everything that's been going on in the last 7 or 8 months.
Well, the whole vaccine thing has been an enormous scam that was planned well in advance, years and years in advance. The World Economic Forum appears to be behind it, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. The idea is to use the coronavirus to destroy the middle class and small businesses, to make most Americans dependent upon their government, where the Democratic Party has signed on to the globalist agenda and appears to be supporting it hook, line, and sinker, where we know from multiple studies that masks don't work. They not only cannot prevent the spread of the virus because it's too tiny to be filtered by the mask, but that they're harmful to human beings and other living things because you're recycling oxygen-depleted air, which is depriving your brain of necessary oxygen that's killing brain cells irreversibly. It's putting a strain on your cardiovascular system. The very best experts that I have discovered are describing it as criminal to put infants or children in masks because their bodies are growing at such a rapid rate that the lack of oxygen is an even more serious form of deprivation to their bodies than it is for adults. We have known it was predictable that the lockdowns would bring about a sense of depression, isolation, lack of social interaction, leading to suicide rates that are climbing. We're going to have more suicides than bona fide deaths from the coronavirus, because the statistics have always been fabricated, Richie, and now the CDC and the WHO have admitted they're no longer counting flu, which would have, you know, many, many times more deaths than anything that could be attributed to the coronavirus, so they can now lump it all together. We're having a school depression. It's virtual learning is absurd. I spent 35 years in higher education. I can guarantee you, virtual learning is no substitution, and we're having a massive despondency in the public, which is really the calculated goal, Richie. The Great Economic Reset is being proposed in several nations now, where other members of the Five Eyes seem to be even more advanced than the USA today, where Canada has been very eagerly creating the equivalent of U.S. FEMA camps. Here's the idea, Richie, that you're going to have the opportunity to participate in the Great Reset, which will give you a guaranteed annual income, a cubicle to live, about 300 square feet, and a vaccination program to participate with recurrent vaccinations, not just one, but a whole series. All the monetary support you have is going to be digital. And because they know everything you do and don't do, if you don't behave, they can cut you off. You can be confined to one of these concentration camps as a public health menace. And if you continue to refuse, you're going to be characterized as an enemy of the state. The FEMA camps here in the U.S. are equipped with Chinese-made guillotines. And frankly, the ultimate plan would be to separate your head from your body if you continue to be resistant, represent the opposite. This is just a monstrous plan, Richie, and it's all based on a fake, exaggerated threat.
Now, I was with you right up until you said guillotines. Hang on now, because everything you said to that point, I mean, I could challenge it, but there isn't much point. We today, the British press has reported on restrictions against travelling next year if you're not vaccinated. All of this stuff that you've been talking about, you know, I buy into it. But you've said something, I don't mean outrageous in terms, I don't think you're outrageous, but it's outrageous for me to hear this. Where's the evidence of guillotines in these FEMA camps?
Oh, Richie, we had past, you know, this is from years past that even Alex Jones was reviewing, you know, with Jesse Ventura and others about the existence of these cars, cattle cars, to transport humans that were equipped with guillotines. I'm drawing an inference, Richie. I'm telling you, based upon my assessment of the situation, that will be
really
the ultimate solution. But I'm perfectly happy to take that back in terms of your having qualifications. I don't have a problem.
No,
with
I don't. Listen, you're the man. You are the man. No, I don't. What I'm listen, I think you're fantastic. That's why you're here. The FEMA camps, I remember Alex Jones reporting on those things with Jesse Ventura. You're absolutely right. And I wondered what would they use them for and when would they use them. I have no doubt that they'll want to intern people for resisting in the future. I have no doubt, Jim. But I'm not calling you a liar. I've never done that. And I know you're as honest as the day is long. When you say something, you mean it, which I greatly admire. But right now, I don't believe that these places are equipped with guillotines. I'd have to see that with my own eyes. And I'm not calling you a liar now. I'm just saying I don't buy that.
Richie, let's set that to the side and say
yeah, of course,
to be determined. I'm happy with that. I don't have a problem with that. But what I'm telling you is I've done a vast amount of research on the coronavirus. They were manufacturing the problem. They're continuing to perpetuate the fraud. Virtually everyone has a coronavirus because it's a residue of having the common cold, having the flu, have any respiratory ailment. They do not have a test that is specific to the SARS-CoV-2 that is supposed to be the great threat. If you go back and look, it turns out for the first quarter of the year, for example, that the number of deaths from the common flu was four times that alleged from the coronavirus. From malaria was, again, double that from the common flu, that they have made an effort to put all of this out of perspective by focusing only on the number that are supposed to be from the coronavirus. And Richie, we had a Minnesota state senator who also happens to be a physician reporting early on, this is way back in around April or so, that the hospitals were being given $13,000 for every patient they qualified as coronavirus, $39,000 for every patient they put on a ventilator. He was explaining why he couldn't understand why, for the first time ever, he was being pressured to identify as a patient as having died from coronavirus when he had not even been tested. Now, here's the key, Richie. The test, as even the CDC has admitted, is giving up to 90% false positives. In other words, it's reporting for some 90% of the cases you have coronavirus when you do not have coronavirus. This is why Hillary, way back in the beginning, was promoting the idea of testing, 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 because she knew the numbers would run up into the atmosphere. And in addition, they are admitting that if you subtract the numbers who had comorbidities, who had other reasons to die, who are probably going to die anyway, it turns out that the actual number of deaths attributable to the coronavirus is fewer than 10,000, Richie, 10,000. So they're using a couple of elementary fallacies I spent 35 years teaching students to detect and avoid. The fallacy of ambiguity, because when they talk about cases, they're talking about positive results to a test, not actually infections, where 90% of the reports of the tests are false positives, and the number of actual deaths from coronavirus is minuscule. But then they're compounding that with special pleading, focusing only on the numbers that benefit them. How many died from coronavirus? The false exaggerated statistics, and ignoring the vast number who die all over the world from other problems. Americans, I mean, when you have a large country You got thousands of people dying every single day from normal causes. And as Senator Jensen explained in Minnesota, you can see the coronavirus death rate. It follows the normal epidemiological pattern for deaths from normal causes. It's ridiculous, Richie. The average death for a coronavirus patient is like 78 years.
Yeah.
And the average death for here. An American is 78 years.
Yeah, it's 82 here. It's, you're absolutely right. Everything you've said there, I totally agree with. Here, it's 82, and the average age of somebody dying with it is 82. I had a Swiss doctor on the program last week, very respected cardiologist, lovely guy, and he explained to me how the testing is fundamentally flawed. He talked, I don't have the terminology now, but he talked about them cycling the tests more than 30, 35 times, which they shouldn't do. They shouldn't do, you know, this spin, whatever, they spin cycle these tests. They shouldn't do that because it guarantees you're going to get a false positive. Really, you're right. And here now in the north of England, predominantly, They're sending the army around. Now, I've got to be careful about how I phrase this. The army are participating in an attempt to regularly test every single person in Manchester, in Liverpool, in Bolton. And the reason, they've admitted the reason, Jim, they've admitted that the reason they're doing this mass testing is because they want to find virus in asymptomatic people. So they want to find virus in people for whom there's nothing wrong with them. They don't feel unwell. They're fine. And you have to wonder about that. Why do they want to do that? And the answer is, to go along with you, because I can't argue with you, they want to introduce mass testing, but also mass vaccination to become part of normal everyday life. You know, today, Jim, they've said the government has bought 200,000 tests, new 5-minute tests, and they've ordered 60 million more a month, whereby if I'm with my friend Jim Fetzer and you say, Richie, I want to go and see Manchester United play soccer, I've never seen them, let's go and see them, we would have to do a test, Jim, and the result of that test would be uploaded onto our digital health passport. This is beyond dystopian. I agree with you. Now let me ask you this. You've been talking about such scenarios for years. You've been talking about and writing about in your books about the state and its desire to control us in this manner. But be honest, did you see this virus pandemic, scamdemic, whatever you want to call it, did you see it coming this year, or did it take you by surprise like everybody else?
Oh, yes, Richie. It took me by surprise, but I've documented this so many ways on my website, jimtheconspiracyguy.com. I have done several different programs or extensive detailed where I present hundreds of slides showing the evidence, the reports from public sources, how Barack Obama was in one of these labs, it may have been the NIH lab, with none other than Anthony Fauci and Melinda Gates together, 2015. In 2017, Anthony, I refer to him as Tony the Rat, Fauci, announced that the Trump administration would be hit not only by seasonal flu and HIV, but by a surprise pandemic. And stop and ask yourself, Richie, how can it be a surprise if he's announcing it's coming in 2017? And moreover, why then isn't he taking measures to cope with it? Because Tony the Rat was a designated figure in the administration to deal with pandemic preparedness. So this whole thing's been a monster scam. It's been compounded by the attack on HCQ, hydroxychloroquine, which is a miracle drug for the coronavirus. It not only functions as a cure, but as a preventative, which we've known since 2005. When an article about it extolling its virtues was published in the journal Virology, which is a publication of the National Institute of Health, of which Anthony Fauci is a director, nobody had to die, Richie. This is a wonder drug that's cheap, readily available. It's been around for 65 years or more. But of course, there's no profit in it for Big Pharma. And if there were such a cure, and frankly, I think they overlooked this in their planning, then it would have destroyed the whole effort to take down the world using a fake pandemic. But I have no doubt this is a worldwide effort to take control, because to participate in the Great Reset, Richie, you have to agree to give up all your property and all your assets and adhere to the agenda. And guillotines or not, it's really going to make yourself, turn yourself into a slave, a serf, working for a tiny number of monsters who control the entire earth by a monstrous swindle of heretofore unimaginable proportions.
I agree with this going the way of the Great Reset and the World Economic Forum and the Fourth Industrial Revolution, because I've seen the evidence. I don't need to be the devil's advocate. I agree with you 100%. But there will be people listening to this today and they will say, right, I know Jim Fetzer. Jim, you know, shoots from the hip. He's been right on many, many, many things that he's talked about over the years. He's not perfect, though, they'll say. They'll say, Jim, where's the evidence that those of us that own our own homes and own our own land, where's the evidence that they'll just be able to confiscate that from us? Nobody's spoken about that. I looked at these World Economic Forum documents and this guy Schwab, and I don't like it. It's terrifying. It's sinister. It's Orwellian. I agree with every, you know, it really is. But nobody's talking about taking people's private property away from them. When is that going to happen, in your opinion? And how would they do that without a massive uprising from the people?
Oh, sure they are, Richie. That's a part of the global reset. You have to agree to surrender your property and all your assets to get the benefit of the state giving you a guaranteed annual income, 300 square feet cubicle where you can reside. And, it's all done digitally so they can control if you do not behave. They're adopting the Chinese model. They're basically, if you look at this from the point of view of sociobiology, Richie, or how our biology affects our behavior and the difference among species, they're trying to reduce human beings to social insects. So we'll all behave in a way that's virtually guaranteed to be cooperative with the state. They won't tolerate dissents. They won't tolerate opposition. In China, if you're a dissident, you simply disappear and you're never heard from again. And this is another reason why I am suggesting, and just take it as a conjecture, that they're going to permanently separate your head from your body to make sure you don't continue to oppose their agenda. I mean, this is serious, and the time is now. This is for all the marbles. We have the Archbishop Vigano writing about. He wrote an open letter to Trump about the COVID health dictatorship, Richie, and he's talking about exactly what you and I are talking about now. So there's another figure over and above one of the monsters, this guy Schwab, this globalist monster. Just look at him. I mean, this is a very sick, degenerate individual like Bill Gates, like Henry Kissinger, like Ted Turner, like the Rothschilds, like others who are behind all of this. They want to control the entire planet Earth, Richie, and they're going to brook no opposition.
What's the I'll ask you in a moment about the end game, what it is they want ultimately. Let me just remind our listeners, Jim has got it's a new website since he was last on, jimtheconspiracyguy.com. Nearly 40 years, higher education, a teacher of critical thinking, an author, a broadcaster, very, very smart guy, Jim Fetzer, is with us on the programme today. I've had a tweet from somebody called Shifty Chicken, who says, well, he or she agrees with you on the, you know, the dissolution of private property. And he or she has tweeted, Jubilee Day, all debts forgiven, you own nothing. So this person thinks that in the near future, all debts will be forgiven completely, meaning that ultimately you won't own anything. I don't want to...
That's right. That's part of it. I'm glad he mentioned the debt forgiveness. Your mortgage is forgiven. Student loans are forgiven. Credit card indebtedness is forgiven. This is all supposed to be an inducement. But in return for that, you have to surrender, turn over all private property and assets. You will own nothing. This is the abolition of private property. And for this very tiny elite group, represented by members of the World Economic Forum, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank, they will control the whole world, all the property of planet Earth. That is the objective, total control.
Total control. And what about those who say that all roads lead to depopulation? Because again, what I wanted to say to you was, you see, a guy like you, and we are going to talk about the election in a moment and claims of cheating. When you proved that the World Trade Center towers could not have been brought down by jet engine fuel, you proved it. Now, we're not going to get bogged down in arguments about what really happened to the Twin Towers, because that's still up for debate. Only in my opinion, I know you feel very strongly, but it doesn't matter because you proved, you and others, but you primarily, way back then, using your critical thinking skills and your reasoning skills, were able to dismantle the narrative. And I don't want to be, I don't want to sound now harsh, because you did a great thing there. But here we are now in 2020, nearly 2021. And yes, a lot of people now know that the 9/11 story was nonsense. And you did a great thing, among others. But the fact is, the vast majority of people, the vast majority, including my neighbours, still think that Osama bin Laden did it from his super cave in the Tora Bora mountain in Afghanistan. The point I'm trying to make is, what you're claiming now, and I go along with most of it, reluctantly, but I do it because I'm honest. I have to go along with it because I can see the truth in it. How the hell are you or anybody else going to get people to believe this? Do you know where I'm going?
Richie, the mainstream media is absolutely crucial here. The fact that it won't publish the truth or report the truth about anything, it's just astonishing. Right now, for example, in spite of massive, overwhelming proof of electoral fraud, which I shall document when we turn to that issue momentarily, they are claiming there's no evidence whatsoever, but it's overwhelming, abundant, and compelling. I mean, it's simply staggering. So the mainstream media is being complimented by the big tech giants and the social media giants, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. They're performing all kinds of despicable acts of censorship. So all of this has to be dealt with. I'm telling you, there's only one man in the world who could do it, and that's the embattled president of the United States. And Richie, you have no idea how grateful I am that this guy is on the job, because he anticipated all of this and appears to have laid a trap to expose what's happening now.
Why didn't he speak about it then? When he had the lectern, when he had the Oval Office, why didn't Trump tell people what was happening?
He still has the Oval Office. He's going to have the Oval Office. He's going to be reelected. But Richie, here's the deal. He had to let this play out for all of his enemies reveal themselves. You've had people coming out and moving way too fast to congratulate this guy who's a complete fraud. I mean, you'd really, until you hear what I'm going to explain, Richie, may not appreciate the full dimensions of the deception being perpetrated by the Democratic Party in alignment with their allies. But he had to remain silent to lay the trap, which appears to be a way in which all the legitimate ballots have been watermarked. They've been tracked using a method known as blockchain. They know where every ballot went. They know who cast them, and they can sort out the real from the fake manufactured ballots, because the Democrats didn't know the legitimate ballots were watermarked. I mean, it's an enormous sting operation, perhaps the greatest sting operation in history, Richie. And the key to it was to not talk about it. And it's still going on. The revelations are coming monstrous. The amount of fraud going on here is overwhelming, as I shall explain when we move forward to that subject.
Well, let's do it now, because we're 23 minutes to the top of the hour. We obviously go till 7, which is 1 p.m. your time. So we've not got that much time anyway. I'll tell you, I'll sum up where I am in 40 seconds. And then I'll shut up and get out of your way, because my listeners know what I think, but I need to sum up. Don't interrupt me now, and then you can speak for as long as you want. I believe that Donald Trump was just another Trojan horse. I said this before on the programme. He was used by the establishment to reinvigorate people, to reconnect them with the electoral process. I believe that the agenda that you've been talking about for most of your, for most of the last 10 to 15 to 20 years, it advanced as much under Donald Trump as it did under any of his predecessors. I believe he was a Trojan horse. I believe everything he did, everything he said he would do when he was campaigning for president, he didn't do. He reneged on every single campaign promise. And I don't think it matters a damn whether you've got Trump, whether you've got Biden, the agenda will proceed anyhow. And what I was saying was he's had 4 years to tell the American people about this agenda, but he hasn't done. He's just farted around on Twitter. And my final word on it, and then you can speak, is no matter what Trump is tweeting about, no matter what Tucker Carlson says, the Electoral College will declare Joe Biden to be president. Trump will scream on for a few more weeks. And in the end, he'll leave the Oval Office with his tail between his legs and Biden will be inaugurated and nothing will change. That is my opinion. Now, you are the guest, so I'll shut the bloody hell up. You tell me why you think I'm wrong.
Richie, you're 100% wrong on every single thing you have just said. It's all wrong, completely wrong. Trump was the unexpected president. He represents everything the establishment on both sides of the aisle do not want. So many issues where he has invigorated the economy, created the most robust economy in American history, and unlike trickle-down economics, the Trump economy truly has raised all boats so that the lowest working wage earners have had their wages rise at the highest rate. Before the pandemic, even Rasmussen was reporting that 40% of black likely voters were going to support Trump because he'd actually done things that were benefiting them by closing down the border, by tightening it up and building the wall. Trump has made it impossible for these illegal immigrants come in and to steal the jobs from under those of the lowest working wages. The Latino community has been similarly responsive to Trump. Well, they made a huge difference in Florida already. But I'm telling you, the enormity of the situation, he has been reforming the judiciary. He has put in place hundreds and hundreds of federal judges who are conservative and will adhere to the law. He's brought about the appointment of 3 conservative justices to the Supreme Court. He's completely changed the balance there. He has done more for the American economy and kept us out of war. He's just appointed a new Secretary of Defense who agrees that the wars in the Middle East were a colossal failure. He's going to get us out of the Middle East. And because the heart of the matter was the electoral system and its massive corruption, he planned very deliberately an elaborate sting to expose it, which is now taking place. He is practicing the art of war of Sun Tzu, where you allow your enemies to expose themselves and commit all their mistakes. Trump has now, you disparage Trump's tweets, but that's another mistake. Here's the latest. Trump tweets that Dominion attempted to alter our election and got caught. You may or may not be aware, but Dominion voting systems was in control of counting the vote in 30 states, including all of the crucial swing states. Dominion, guess what? I'll bet you also do not know. The chief executive of Dominion is the chief of staff of Nancy Pelosi. The principal investor in Dominion voting system is the husband of Dianne Feinstein. Right now, as we speak, the election has yet to be determined. What you have been seeing is a manifestation of a rolling coup, very carefully planned, which appears to have been administered by the CIA. You're going to see a lot of heads are going to roll because the final outcome has yet to be determined. That Trump has launched lawsuits in seven states, in Nevada, in Arizona, in Georgia, in North Carolina, in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, and in Michigan.
Yeah.
Those seven states control 94 electoral votes. Without having those states decided, Richie, it's impossible to know who won the election.
And it's impossible for you. It's impossible for you to know. Hang on a second now. These claims made by Trump, 221,000 Pennsylvania votes switched from him to Biden, nearly a million votes deleted. These are claims made by Donald Trump. Now, before you jump back in, he's provided no evidence to support any of these claims whatsoever. And his biggest supporter, Fox News, have abandoned him because some of his biggest propagandists have said the guy is talking nonsense. There's no evidence. And you, as smart as you are, you don't know that he's telling the truth. You want
Richie,
to believe him.
As smart as you are so far off base, I'm just dumbfounded and stupefied. Michael, Robert Murdoch, who founded Fox, was a bona fide conservative. But
Rupert Murdoch,
he's
yeah.
out of the picture. His sons are running Fox now, and they are globalists. They are participating in this huge scam. The amount of evidence that showed that Joe Biden was corrupt coming from the Hunter Biden laptops, which the mainstream suppressed, led to Tucker Carlson, whom you're also disparaging, who I regard as the single most clear voice on the anywhere in the world of
I like
media.
Him. I like him. He's a good guy. I don't mind him.
Richie,
I don't mind Tucker.
You're gonna let me speak.
I am. I'm letting you speak. I like Tucker.
Let me speak, Richie.
Go ahead.
I'm really disappointed in you. I have hundreds,
because I don't agree with you.
I have hundreds of reports of all kinds of voting scam, including videos showing poll workers who are recording themselves putting up Trump votes and then showing themselves tearing them up, declaring they have done this with tens of thousands of votes and so have all of their other poll workers. I'm trying to get across to you how Trump knows and how these numbers are legitimate. We've got all kinds of publications out there. I'm reporting every single day on the scamming, where you appear to have missed the memo. I'm very, very troubled. How can
no,
you
let me explain. Let me explain. Let me explain. Let me explain.
Seven of the crucial states have yet to even be called.
Let me explain, Jim.
Judicial Watch. Look, Richie, here's a headline. This I'm reporting today.
Go on.
MIT scientist offers President Trump proof that computer algorithm lightly transferred 69,000 votes from Trump to Biden, Michigan. Let me tell you the key to this thing. There was a clerk who was a woman of great integrity who noticed there was a 6,000 vote switch from Trump to Biden in Michigan. If you and this was with this Dominion software. We have an election fraud expert who was warning all along about the Dominion voting scams and how they were going to steal the election. Just think of the enormity of what's happened here. And this is provable, Richie, that if you had 6,000 in one county in Michigan, well, there are about 83 counties in Michigan. There are about 159 in Pennsylvania, where the threat had been enormous and beyond belief. We it turns out if you assume 100 counties for the sake of mathematical simplicity times 6,000 times 30, we're talking about the potential manipulation of 18 million votes. It appears to be the case that given the blockchain technology and the watermark that Trump had very cleverly worked out in advance so he could expose a scam, which Steve Pachenik, but also others have confirmed to be the case, where even Melania on the day of the election was wearing a blockchain dress. We have state after state where the projected vote is greater than the number of registered voters. Nevada, the projected vote of 1,593,143, but registered only 1,277,000.
Yeah.
The turnout of 125%.
Let me back in for a minute. Let me back in. I'm not saying that I don't believe any of this. What I'm trying to say, and I've been saying this for months. Months I've been saying it. In fact, I've been saying it since 2016. What if this is one massive psyop, psychological operation on the American people. Let me sum it up in 30 seconds. I know you're not going to agree with it. Back in 2015, 2014, 2013, because of the efforts of the independent media, people had become disenfranchised with politics because they knew that right or left, it didn't matter. They were screwed either way. The agenda continued. Now, I've always believed that whether Trump is part of it or not, I don't know, but that Trump is part of a psyop on the American people to convince them that there is a third way, there is another way. And would you believe this, Jim? I said to my listeners back in way before the election, I said, if I was the elite, I would throw the election to Biden and make it look like Trump was screwed, because that would cause chaos. That would stir up, the sort of civil unrest that the elite dream of. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying Trump wasn't robbed and that I know he wasn't. I'm not saying that because I don't know. But I look at these other angles. I don't believe that Trump was doing anything for humanity. I personally do not believe that. I look at what happened in Israel. I look at what happened in Israel. I look at the fact he didn't go after. The Clintons are about the most criminal faction, the most corrupt and criminal couple that have ever walked planet Earth. Trump said he would deal with it. He didn't do anything. All I'm saying is, imagine this is a huge psyop to get people as animated as you are today. Go ahead.
And the way we know it's not a huge psyop is so bloody obvious. I cannot believe you cannot see the forest for the trees. They've been trying to get rid of Trump since before he was inaugurated, for God's sake. They were fabricating the Russian dossier. They were bringing all these ridiculous charges of Russian interference and manipulation. They were then fabricating a Ukraine hoax. They had a phony impeachment. They got a fake pandemic. Don't you understand? They would not be fighting tooth and nail if this guy were not a massive threat to the deep state. Richie, you just astound me. You have missed the boat 100%.
Let me respond to that now. Let me respond to that. This is my show. Hang on a second. You can insult me as much as you want, and I won't get offended because I love you anyway. You can say whatever you want. You're saying you're astounded that I can't see that. Well, what if I said that I'm astounded that you can't see that the whole thing might be a big play? Even listen, I reported on the ridiculous allegations of Russian interference. I reported on the ridiculous allegations of Ukrainian. It was all nonsense. But what if it was all part of one big, massive story to convince everybody that this was all real, that this guy was really some warrior of light trying to bring down the big state? What if the entire, the whole thing was bullshit? Why can't you consider that?
Richie, look, give me a little credit. I've been doing for 35 years dealing with issues of reality and illusion. You think I didn't cross my mind? Of course it has.
Yeah.
I've been reporting on this. I've been reporting on these developments every single day for the last 120 days or more, Richie, every day of the week. I'm doing 10 shows a week. I'm going through all the evidence, which you are not, because otherwise you would know what the hell is going on. Let me give you some background, Richie. That's how I understand the enormity of this scam. There was a parallel with 2016, because then FBI Director James Comey would not endorse the contents of the Anthony Weiner laptop, which were devastating to Hillary, and he covered it up. 2020, new FBI Director Christopher Wray covers up the contents of the Hunter Biden laptop, because it would be devastating to the Biden campaign. So that, you know, even though there's an enormous amount of proof where Hunter, where Tucker drew 7.8 million viewers when he featured Tony Bobulinski, was the business guy who showed how the Biden crime family had been conducting operations not only in Ukraine, not only in China, but also in Iraq and Russia as well. But where Roy wanted to cover up because he was complicit in some of those acts. Now, everyone knows Joe Biden was cognitively incompetent, massive deterioration, couldn't remember what state he was in, what office he was running, whether the woman standing beside him was his wife or the person introducing him on the behalf of the state Democratic leadership. It got so bad that when it came to the first debate, they had a problem. I reported then in part of my live coverage of the debate that we had a report the Biden people already had the questions. Well, that's not surprising. We had a report in addition that Biden had had skull surgery to implant electronic device so he could get information about what he should say from off the stage. That's not surprising either. Then we had a defection from a member of the staff who said that Biden's anti-dementia medication had the unfortunate side effect of incontinence, so that they'd actually had staff meetings debating which type of adult diaper Biden ought to be wearing that would be least visible through his clothing and least crinkle when he urinates. So I predict Biden has a future after politics making commercials for Depend. Now get this. Before the debate, the Biden camp asked for breaks every 90 minutes. It was only going to be an hour and a half debate. They needed a break every 90 minutes to change his diaper. When Team Trump refused, they went with Plan B. They sent out a guy who looks a lot like Joe Biden, but who is not Joe Biden. He's a body double. The difference is he's actually cognitively competent. He could stay there for 90 minutes with a debate. And he didn't have the skull implant, so he was wearing a wire. Joe Biden has uses a double Windsor knot. He had a single, but tellingly, he had the wrong earlobes. His earlobes come down and connect directly to the skin. Joe Biden has ears that connect upward. He has pendulous earlobes. Joe Biden has a wider skull. This guy has a narrower skull. James Woods was the first to observe that the Biden debate, had brown eyes, whereas Joe Biden has blue.
Jim, we're going to run out of time. Hang on a sec. All of this stuff is very relevant to you. I'm not disputing any of this stuff. I could spend hours arguing with you. I'm not disputing that Joe Biden and the Democratic Party and the DNC is fundamentally deeply corrupt. I'm not going to dispute any of that. I told you I'll concede the ridiculous Russian allegations, the situation in Ukraine, all of that, 100%. But what I'm saying is, and I'm going to repeat it, and then I'm going to give you the final word, and we'll wrap it up for today. And obviously we'll return to it when this fleshes out, when this develops in the next couple of weeks, in the next couple of months. My position is, and I see evidence of it, while all of this may feel very real to Donald Trump, I'm not saying that Donald Trump is an actor. I'm not saying that at all. While this might feel very real to him and to the people around him, and while the allegations of electoral fraud in Pennsylvania and elsewhere might be very, very real, I believe, because I've been around a long time as well, my friend, I believe that all the signs are there for me that the entire thing is one massive, elaborate stitch-up on the people of planet Earth to get us animated and reinvigorated and once again immersed in the idea that we get to vote our way out of the shit. We don't. The elite couldn't give a damn whether Trump, Biden, Hillary, Barack Obama, George H.W. Bush, they couldn't give an arse. It doesn't matter to them. And that's what I fundamentally believe. So keep that in mind. Yes, it feels real to Trump that he's being robbed. And to all intents and purposes, he might very well be. But I'm saying in the grander scheme of things, it doesn't matter. To the architects of all of this, they couldn't care less. I'm not insulting your intelligence. You see electoral fraud, you have the evidence. I'm happy to believe that. But I'm saying it doesn't matter. Final word to you, and we will pick it up again with a longer segment when we get more information from the Electoral College, when we see what happens. Final word, my friend. It's great to have you back on the show. Go ahead.
Richie, you're a great guy. I hold you in the highest esteem. You're just wrong. That's all. But Donald Trump will be inaugurated again. There will be a second Trump administration. By virtue of this sting, he's had his enemies expose themselves. They have had people like Bibi Netanyahu rush to congratulate Joe Biden, who is a complete fraud. Everyone involved in this, everyone in the DNC, the mainstream media all knows this is not Joe Biden. I mean, it was incredible when he came out with this awful person, Kamala Harris, to make a statement about having won the election. You had a fake Biden giving a fake message to a fake audience. It was at a drive-in theater, and there were a whole bunch of red, white, and blue new Jeeps, and they were all empty. There wasn't anyone there. Joe Biden couldn't get 10 people to come out to a rally. You have missed this so badly, I'm just stupefied. When Trump came to Kenosha, which is just a couple hours from where I reside here in Wisconsin. There was a stream of citizens five blocks long. When Joe Biden came to Kenosha, there was one person to meet him. When Joe Biden came to Duluth, where I lived for 19 years, which, by the way, has the highest voter turnout historically of any city in the United States, he had a couple hundred people who were curious about him when he was in downtown Duluth. When he went to the Carpenters Union to give his rally, there were 12 people there. Meanwhile, Donald Trump was elsewhere in the state with tens of thousands. That's been replicated all over the country. It's just astonishing. Nobody gives a shit about Joe Biden. Yeah. He's a criminal. He's incompetent. Nobody is even willing to turn out for his rallies. And the idea that he could have won a massive landslide is absurd on its face. And I hope you aren't taken in, my friend.
Well, listen, it doesn't matter. It doesn't.
All this will be revealed it in will short be. Order.
That was
and
going to be my...
my words, 20 January, Donald Trump will be inaugurated again as the next president of the United States.
Jim, if I've been taken in, and if this reveals itself and resolves itself in the way you think it will, I'll be the first to put my hand up and say, I got it wrong. I've always done that in my career. I don't think I have, but that's the whole point of this radio show. I speak to people with whom I don't always agree. Listen, let's watch it play out over the next few weeks and then pick it up again when there's more to talk about. Great to have you back, my friend.
I'm so glad you had me back. Anytime. You're a great guy. And we all make mistakes from time to time. It's part of what it means to be a human being, to make mistakes. And in this case, it just happens to be a very, very significant situation where, in my opinion, you've got it wrong. And we're going to see. This is a nice testable hypothesis, Richie.
Yeah.
It's going to play out, as you observe, in the next 2 weeks. And the dominoes are already starting to fall.
Jim's website, folks, is jimtheconspiracyguy.com. You've just been listening to Professor Jim Fetzer live from Madison, live from Wisconsin, on Thursday's Richie Allen Show. Great to chat, my friend. We'll do it all again real soon, much sooner. Thanks,
You're
Jim.
Wonderful, Richie. I can't thank you enough.
Not at all, mate. Bye for now. Jim Fetzer then closing out the program today. That's about it for the program. We're over time. I want to get this edited for the two-hour turnaround. I'm back with you tomorrow at 3 o'clock UK time. There is no Sunday View for the foreseeable future. I'm doing Fridays instead. It's drive time. There'll be more music, but it'll be a bit fun. And we'll just have a look back at the week in the media with a humorous eye, I think. That's Friday. Tomorrow is 3 o'clock. Until then, thanks to my guests. Thanks so much to Jim and to Sir Desmond Swain, MP, as well. And would you believe it? I didn't line up a tune. But as luck would have it, this was left in the playout system from the other day. This is Van Morrison closing out Thursday's programme.